from the latest on Caribbean cruises to kosher safaris, pilgrimages to Jewish Eastern Europe, and award-winning wines and international cuisine in sun-drenched Tel Aviv. Sit back and enjoy the trip with the travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast. And a very, I want to say, warm welcome to the podcast. But Mark, where on earth have you taken me this time?
You know how we like to go off the beaten track a little?
Just a bit.
So we are underground in Tel Aviv.
I would never ever know this is Tel Aviv. We just passed a cage and there's an engineering unit behind it and we're in a long corridor. This corridor runs, what, 200 yards straight in front of us?
We're walking past a bomb shelter now.
Okay.
But it's not just any bomb shelter. This is Tel Aviv's nuclear bomb shelter.
What, we're in it now?
Well, we're just about to go in it through these gates.
In fact, if I come over here and... It's not... It doesn't sound that...
I think this is the outer entrance. And when you get to the bottom...
Yeah.
Then you get to an inner entrance.
Anyway, this is a travel show.
Yes.
Why on earth... Are we subterranean in Tel Aviv?
Well, for the nature lovers amongst us, there's a bat cave down here as well. You won't see Robin or the Batmobile.
But there's really a bat.
Genuinely bats down here.
Again, this is a travel show. You know about this, but how did you find out?
We're at Tel Aviv bus station.
Buses haven't been on this level ever.
Yeah, there was, I think, a level one, but now the buses are on level 5, 6 or 7.
Right.
It's a really, really different building. Opened, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Scheduled for closure from about 29 years ago.
It is not salubrious as we pass a water closet.
Yes.
A pistoir.
A urinal.
Actually on this corridor, but I guess if you're in a nuclear shelter, you do need them. But. Yeah. You've been here on a tour.
I have. One of the most fascinating tours you can do in Tel Aviv is the Tel Aviv bus station tour.
So what's in it apart from this floor and buses?
On the top floor, did you know there's a Doctor Who exhibition here?
Wow. No.
Did you know there are 6 churches in here?
Yes, because you just told me before we started recording.
Did you know there's a Filipino market in here?
Yes, because we passed it. Now, the Filipino market's really cool.
Yeah.
Because we're in South Tel Aviv, which is where all the foreign work, many, many foreign workers live. And there are lots of shops up on street level, but they also take advantage of down here, where I assume the rent is a lot cheaper.
Indeed. A lot of the care workers that come into Israel to look after the elderly and the sick, at the weekends when they're on holiday, they come to Tel Aviv, their families are here, their children go to school around here.
What we're going to do over the course of this podcast, as we've done in other pods, is bring you a little bit of Tel Aviv with a difference. Even though Tel Aviv isn't our real destination today, we're going to be heading off in 2 very different directions.
We're going to head slightly west from Israel, across the Mediterranean, to Albania.
Absolutely fascinating, one of the smallest countries in Europe, but with a phenomenal story. Then we are going to be heading way west to one of the very foundation cities of the United States. We're going to Philly.
Oh, I like Philly steak.
We'll talk more about that maybe a little bit later.
Philadelphia cheese.
From here down in subterranean Tel Aviv, before we go to our first interview, it's time for a couple of quiz questions.
Question number one. Which actor and musician sang about being West Philadelphia born and raised?
And question number two. Albanians refer to themselves as Shikipat.
That was supposed to be question one. You can see why I left it.
Albanians refer to themselves as Shikiptare. What does Shikiptare mean? The answers at the end of the pod.
This is Mark Gordon from the Jerusalem Post podcast Travel Edition. Find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at MarkDavidPod or mail us at MarkDavidPod@gmail.com.
I think we're safe from nuclear attack now.
I tell you what, it was stifling down there, but it's also stifling up here. You told me, let's go to Tel Aviv. We've got a couple of meetings. We'll do some introductions to the podcast. You didn't tell me it's like the hottest day of the year.
That's tomorrow.
it's what? We're way up in the high 30s. What's that in Fahrenheit?
I think we're approaching 97, 98.
It's hot. It's
boiling.
Hot.
Well, not boiling, because technically that's...
Yes. Yeah, anyway. But at least we're sitting down. We found a lovely little cafe.
Called Cafe K-Mac.
Right.
In Levinsky Market, in the Florentine area of Tel Aviv.
Right. It's bustling. Mm. It's. I've been here only on a Friday before in the market. And then the whole place is laden with chairs, street furniture, people just sitting, taking in the atmosphere, soaking in the sun, and eating some of the fine food from this area.
And if you breathe in, you can smell the spices and the food coming from the cafes, the falafel.
Now, you did say something very interesting, because mostly when you come to Israel these days, the type of food you're going to get is what we tend to call Mizrahi food, Middle Eastern food. So the obvious falafels and so on. Maybe you'll have the amber mango-flavored sauce, tahina, and so on. But you also said that here is one of a dying breed.
Yeah. On the way from the bus station to Levinsky Market is a restaurant called Sender. And I've been saying for 10 years I would love to go there. Maybe we'll get there today, maybe
because
we won't. Because it is Ashkenazi food, proper Eastern European food. Your Gribbeners and your Luckies and your Schmaltz. Not for David.
Now, talking of that mix of, well, let's say, Sephardi and Ashkenazi, I was recently over in New England and learning a lot about sort of the original places that Sephardim, people who were Spanish and Portuguese and then Dutch, Jewish people who went over to America as along with the founding fathers and even before that, the times of Columbus, and then had the Ashkenazim moved in afterwards. And there was a whole swathe of Jewish life, which is of course still there today, throughout New England, all the way down, say, as far as Washington, D.C. One of the original places, of course, of the founding of the United States, and where there is a rich Jewish history, is Philadelphia.
My knowledge of Philadelphia is very limited, having never been there. We should talk to an expert, Michael Schatz from Philadelphia Jewish History Tours.
I grew up in this community, and my grandparents came from Philadelphia. My great-grandparents were immigrants from the old country and came straight here. And I love history. I studied history in college, and the closer the history was to me, the more I was interested in it. So when it came to Jewish history and when it came to history of Philadelphia, and as the two coincide, that's really a passion of mine.
Philadelphia is at the heart of America's creation. How does the Jewish story intertwine with the founding fathers?
There were Jews here from before the revolution. There were Jewish peddlers, Sephardic Jews that had come circuitously from Spain and through London and Amsterdam and South America and ended up in the eastern seaboard of what became the United States. But the community dates from 1740 with the establishment of a cemetery and a congregation that still operates today called Mikveh Israel. And it had members of the congregation who were prominent patriots in the American Revolution, who were citizens of the community and helped to establish many Philadelphia institutions that are still around, as well as leaders in the Jewish community, dating back well over 250 years.
Moving forward, the end of the 19th century came that great wave of Ashkenazis from Eastern Europe. I'm assuming that includes your own family as well. How did that change the equilibrium within the Jewish community and beyond?
This old community dating back, as I said, over 250 years. And in the first couple hundred years, it was very slow to grow. There were waves of German Jewish immigrants through the 19th century. And we think that there were around 12,000 Jews at the time of the Civil War. And by the beginning of the First World War, so a period of about 50 years, there were 200,000 Jews, mostly Eastern European, who, of course, numerically overwhelmed the established American Jewish community. And there was a kind of a bifurcation. The Americans looked to help their co-religionists from Eastern Europe. with charitable organizations and whatever they could, hospitals and so forth, but at the same time socially distanced themselves, lived in different neighborhoods, belonged to different synagogues, sat on boards of different organizations, and that really persisted until the 1950s and 60s. Some even say even longer. The immigrant Jewish community built a whole life and a network of institutions similar to what happened in New York, although on a much smaller scale.
What is there for people to see Jewishly in Philadelphia today that helps them understand that story?
There are quite a number of things that are still around, some of which are still used by the Jewish community and others where you can see the Hebrew dates or Jewish icons such as a Star of David or a menorah on a building that's been repurposed to something else. The oldest institution, as I mentioned already, is the Mikveh Israel Cemetery from 1740, which is a small walled area in the heart of the city across from Pennsylvania Hospital that you can visit and still go inside and see the graves of the Gratz family and of Chaim Solomon and other prominent Philadelphians from over 200 years ago. There are historic synagogues in what's called the Jewish Quarter, the date from the immigration period. The most prominent is B'nai Abraham. The congregation dates from 1881. The building dates from 1910, purposefully built as a synagogue and still worshipped in by the same congregation, still an Orthodox Ashkenaz congregation using that building. There are other synagogues in that neighborhood and old buildings that perhaps were built as churches, but they've been synagogues for so long, no one remembers. Except for the tour guides, that they used to be churches. And all over the city, there are former synagogues that have been repurposed, some of which retain the Jewish stained glass and Hebrew verses, and others really you have to look carefully to see its Jewish past. And of course, as a community, there are many buildings besides synagogues, but those seem to be the ones that have endured.
If I'm coming to Philadelphia, I know about Independence Hall. I've heard of the Liberty Bell. I know Philadelphia has lots of great sports teams like the 76ers and the Eagles. What else is there for me to do as a novice in Philadelphia?
So besides the major things, there's lots of quite charming and interesting smaller museums and even some larger ones. Some of our favorites are the Franklin Institute Science Museum. You want to make sure you see the National Museum of American Jewish History. It's been renamed the Weitzman Museum. Really quite a fabulous collection. And in the Independence Mall area near the Liberty Bell, there's also the Constitution Center, a museum of the American Revolution. There's a new Bible museum. And along the Benjamin Franklin Parkway near the Franklin Institute, there's the Philadelphia Museum of Arts, the Rodin Museum, the Barnes Collection, which incidentally was built out of Jerusalem stone. So if you're from Israel, you'll feel quite at home on the outside of the Barnes Collection. There's world-class theater and the Philadelphia Orchestra. There are events throughout the year. One of the most interesting is if you come around New Year's, you'll see the Mummers Parade, which is really unlike anything else in the world. I suppose it's been compared to Carnival in New Orleans or some of the South American countries, but it happens on New Year's and it's really quite a spectacle and a sight to see.
Is there a statue of Rocky Balboa?
Yes, there is. Just like in the movies. And it sits on the grounds outside of the Philadelphia Museum of Art. So it's a fabulous collection inside, but many tourists enjoy just the Rocky statue and running up and down the steps.
What about kosher Shabbat? For those people who are interested in that way of life, what does Philly have to offer them?
So if you're traveling in the downtown area, which we call Center City or in town, downtown really refers to South Philadelphia. So in town, where the historic district is and so forth, there are hotels of every brand. There's an Eruv. The Mikveh Israel, the original Spanish and Portuguese congregation, hosts Shabbat meals that you can sign up for and pay in advance. There are a number of vegan kosher restaurants in Center City, and you have to go a little bit out of the city for the meat restaurants. In the close western suburbs, Bala Cynwyd and Marion, there are a number of restaurants, as well as in Northeast Philadelphia.
What about the general food scene once we go beyond the words kosher and vegetarian?
Philadelphia is known for a number of unique food eatings. One of them is the steak sandwich, or sometimes the cheese steak sandwich. Far from kosher, but that's okay. There's a rivalry in an area of South Philadelphia where on one corner is Gino's and in the other corner is Pat's Steaks. I can't tell you which is better. I have no idea. but they're well known. And all around the city are neighborhood steak shops where you can get that, or a hoagie, which is also on a long roll, but it's a cold sandwich with tuna fish or meat of different kinds. There are a number of high-end restaurants all over the city. One prominent restaurateur is Michael Solomonov, who is has an Israeli restaurant called Zahav, and he has a number of other restaurants as well, but Zahav is really one of the most prominent. There are also Jewish-style delicatessens all over Philadelphia, although not kosher. The delicatessen style is somewhat different from New York. In New York, they have hot meat carved on a steam table, and in Philadelphia, they're known for cold sliced meat on a slicer, and sometimes on a sandwich with rye bread and coleslaw and Russian dressing, and that's called a special. So you get a corned beef special or a turkey special. So that's kind of a Philadelphia take on traditional deli. Another treat is the Philadelphia soft pretzel. It's a pretzel, but it's not crunchy. It's kind of soft, and it's about this big. I don't know. I can't describe that on a voice. That's 6 inches long, I guess. And you can get, there's kosher versions as well as regular ones, although all it is flour, water, and salt. They used to sell them on the corners everywhere. Now there's more little shops and delis where you can buy the soft pretzels. And the place you can get them is Wawa. To call it a convenience store is really underselling it. It's a local chain that started as a dairy, then was sort of a convenience store. And now it's really a unique kind of a takeout food place with a little grocery section, a lot of coffee, and all kinds of sandwiches and quick bites.
If listeners want to join one of your Jewish tours, how can they contact you?
I have a website, and it is phillyjewishhistory.com. That's two H's in the middle of there. Philly Jewish, next word, history.com. And I also have a Facebook page, Philadelphia Jewish History Tours. And I am happy to take groups from adult education groups and teenagers, family groups, individuals. And we do walking tours of the Jewish Quarter, and we do trolley tours where you bring your own vehicle, a bus or a trolley is kind of like a trackless a bus, and we go into the other old neighborhoods where we can see the remnants of 20th century Jewish life.
Dr. Michael Schatz, it's been fascinating. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Happy to speak with you.
Philadelphia Fact File. Philadelphia International Airport is a hub for American and many other airlines fly in as well. There's currently no non-stop service from Israel, but it's easy to get to Philly from Newark via public transport. Amtrak's major stop is 30th Street Station in Philadelphia, which is just a few blocks from the center of the city. Amtrak trains make Philadelphia in less than 2 hours from either New York or Washington, D.C. Rail service around Philadelphia is very convenient. Trains from the airport terminals set off every half an hour and take about 25 minutes. Regional rail services run throughout the city and suburbs. There's also an extensive network of trolleys, buses, a subway, L train, and high-speed lines. All major hotel chains are in the city at every budget. The climate is typical of Northeast America. Hot, humid summers, winters vary from very cold and snowy days to more moderate. Lovely long spring and fall seasons with beautiful foliage, including leaves changing in late October, and cherry blossoms, dogwoods and magnolia trees in spring. Downtown is one of the largest walkable urban neighborhoods in the nation, with everything from commerce to government, shopping, restaurants, entertainment, and culture. Restaurants include the kosher vegetarian Harmony in Chinatown, the vegan PS & Co., and the Israeli-themed, but not kosher, Zahav.
Now it's time for the latest news from the Jerusalem Post podcast Travel Edition. Flights between Israel and China could resume before the year's end. China's Hainan and Sichuan Airlines are expected to fly between Tel Aviv and Shenzhen and Chengdu. Israel hopes Chinese tourism will play a major part in reaching its goal of 10 million tourists annually by 2030.
Each year around the Rosh Hashanah New Year, tens of thousands of Israelis head for Uman in Ukraine, the burial place of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Despite the Russian invasion, at least 10,000 have already arrived in the city. Now, a Ukrainian rabbi and the mayor of Uman have issued pleas for pilgrims to stay away for their own safety.
While the Arab Gulf state of Qatar will host soccer's World Cup in November and December, it's Dubai that could well be the main beneficiary. Experts say a lack of accommodation alongside stricter religious rules in Qatar mean many tourists will base themselves in Dubai and fly in for specific games.
In another attempt to reduce waiting times in departures at Ben Gurion Airport, Israeli authorities announced plans for digital procedures for international flights. As in many airports overseas, passengers will check in at kiosks. This is in addition to early check-in sites around the country and separate lines for those with only hand luggage.
Spain is limiting the number of visitors to many of its major natural attractions because of overcrowding. Among the top attractions where limits are enforced are Azcatetres Beach in Galicia, famed for its striking rock formations, Mount Teide, the highest mountain in Spain, and Doñana National Park, one of Europe's most important wetlands.
You're listening to the Jerusalem Post podcast, Travel Edition. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at MarkDavidPod, or mail us at markdavidpod@gmail.com.
The streets are paved with gold here, you know.
Why do you say that?
Because if you walk maybe 50 metres from here, there's the start of a gold trail, or the Independence Trail, and you can follow a little gold line through the streets of Tel Aviv and follow the story of independence.
Which independence? American independence, like we were just in Philly, or...
Albanian independence?
Funny you should mention that. But before we get on to Albania, we're sitting on Rothschild Street?
Boulevard.
Boulevard.
It's a boulevard. It's quite wide.
There's lots of boulevards, actually, in Tel Aviv, if you know where to look.
There are three or four boulevards with parks in the middle of them.
Isn't Gordon one of them?
No. Ben-Gurion.
Yeah.
There's Chen, there's Rothschild, and a fourth one that I can't remember.
Okay, that was four. I think you actually just
said four.
No,
you added one that wasn't one.
Yeah, I said Gordon because that's your name.
That's not, but there are two Gordon streets though, and they're right near each other.
Go on.
There's A.D. Gordon and J.L. Gordon.
Who's J.L. Gordon?
Rabbi Yehuda Leib Gordon.
And who was he?
A rabbi.
And who was A.D. Gordon?
He was a philosopher, Aleph Dalad Gordon, as he was known.
Look at you with your Tel Aviv knowledge. One day we'll tell people what you do in the rest of your time when you're not making podcasts.
I've got two streets named after me here, both of them called Gordon.
And neither of them called Mark.
No. Talking of Gordons in Albania, talk to somebody called Gordon about Albania, and not me.
Oh, we're joined now by veteran American Israeli journalist, travel writer, food and wine expert, Buzzy Gordon.
I've been a travel writer for, well, I guess now almost half a century. My first article came out in 1974. It was when I was a backpacker, and it was about the Jews of Afghanistan. And since then, I was hooked.
You've just been on a trip to Albania. My knowledge of Albania is limited to knowing that it was once ruled by a dictator called Enver Hoxha. That's Albania for me, and the capital's Tirana. Can you tell us a little bit more about Albania?
Let people know where it is. It's a little country just north of Greece, on the western side of Greece. It's sandwiched between Greece and Montenegro. It's where the Adriatic and Ionian Seas meet. So they have a Riviera. It's not a long one, but it's a very beautiful one. As for the thumbnail version of history, it was a feudal kingdom, like many of the Balkans, until the Roman Empire. And then it was under the Byzantine Empire, and then it was under the Ottoman Empire. After the Ottoman Empire collapsed, it became independent. It had a king with the colorful name of Zog, King Zog. He didn't last long because the Italians invaded. The Italian fascists met with severe resistance by the Albanians. And the most popular resistance fighter was a guy named Enver Hoxha, who was also a communist. So after World War II, he parlayed his popularity into actually being democratically elected the head of state of Albania. But then he quickly became a Stalinist-type dictator. He ruled with an iron fist, and when Stalin died, then Hoxha turned to Mao. He made his country basically a prison state, an iron curtain, around all its borders.
He became a mouthpiece.
Oh, all right. I see puns are allowed on the podcast.
Absolutely.
For a long time, Albania was isolated. Its only ally were the Red Chinese, and its people couldn't leave. And even inside the country, they were subject to horrific surveillance by the Secret Service. And even today, all around the city of Tirana and Albania, you'll see these little concrete bunkers popping up from the ground. And that's where the Secret Service watched everyone, and they had bugs everywhere. And there's a museum in Tirana called the House of Leaves, which is a museum dedicated to the surveillance techniques of the Secret Service. And there are tours you can take about communist Albania, just like if you go to Latvia, where I was recently, you can take tours of life under communism in Riga.
It's a Muslim majority country. So a question I'm sure lots of Israelis would ask is, can I, with an Israeli passport, visit Albania?
When people ask me about a Muslim majority country, I can, okay, yes, but the fact is that the one thing Haja did manage to do was secularize the country. He closed all the mosques, he made them community centers, and the population lost its religiousness. And so now, if you look at the surveys of Albania, 60% of the country will identify culturally as Muslims, but religiously they don't practice. It's much like Chiloni Israelis. And the full 40% of the Albanian population is Christian, mostly Greek Orthodox, but other sects as well. And anti-Semitism doesn't exist. There's a handful of Jews, but as we'll see, they're not only tolerated today, they were saved during the Holocaust by the Albanians. As far as Israel is concerned, there's absolutely no restrictions on Israelis. You can go there without a visa. You'll be very welcome at the IMTM travel fair in Tel Aviv every year. There's an Albanian presence with tour operators trying to drum up business.
During your recent trip, did you just hang out in Tirana, or were you able to see the rest of the country? And is there more to see than the larger city?
Tirana may be the capital, but Albania is a small country, so its capital is also rather provincial and not cosmopolitan. But let me tell you why I went to Albania in the first place. First of all, I went because I was intrigued by its being a sort of virgin when it comes to international tourism, what we call unspoiled. It is not overrun by tourists, and it was so refreshing coming from Athens, where tourists are everywhere, that in Albania there's very few tourists, except in the UNESCO cities, and they're very laid back. Secondly, perhaps the biggest advantage of Albania is its cost. I would say not only is it inexpensive, it is downright cheap. For example, you can find a good hotel starting at 30 euros a night, which is 120 shekel. You can have a full meal with wine and beer and alcohol starting at 20 euro, which is about 80 shekel. So you can see that a vacation, even on the beach or even in good restaurants in the cities, is not going to run you a lot of money. Actually, the major draws of Albania are not Tirana. The number one draw might be the Riviera all along the Adriatic. The nearest, most convenient beach city near the airport is Durrës, which also has an interesting history. And it has a great hotel, the Adriatic, where I stayed. There is also the city of Vlorë, which you might call Albania's Eilat, a thriving beach resort with lots of hotels and nightlife and what you might expect. The other major draw is its UNESCO sites. As I mentioned, it has a long history, so it has medieval sites, some impressive castles, and the city of Berat, especially, is called a museum city. The whole city, basically, except for the modern section, has been declared a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and that's where I spent half of my time in Albania. It's a fascinating place.
You mentioned there was a Jewish story about the small population, but there was a deeper story than that. What is that story for Albania?
Albania has a tradition called Besa. Besa is best defined as a code of honor, which means that if you are a guest of someone in Albania, you are obligated to protect that guest to the maximum, even at the cost of your own life. The Jews arrived in Albania in the 16th century. They were at the tail end of the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in the 15th century. and they got to Albania in the 16th century. And ever since then, they've been considered a protected minority, not protected in the sense of government, but in the sense of Besa. So when the Nazis came, no one ever turned over a Jewish family to the Nazis. And this is something that's been researched and documented by Yad Vashem. They note the phenomenon of Besa. They even note that it's the only country in Europe where there were more Jews left after the war than before the war. And the Albanians are very proud of it. They know their history. They know about the Jews in Besa. And they are particularly proud to be a country that has religious harmony. You'll see mosques and churches side by side. And there's a thriving synagogue in the suburb of Tirana, which also has government, not official support, but whenever there's a major event, even a government minister might show up.
How does Albanian cuisine hold up? How does it match up to other cuisines?
Because of its long coastline, a lot of its food is derived from the sea. Apologies to our kosher listeners, but lots of excellent seafood. The unique thing about Albanian cuisine are the dishes called tave. Tave comes from the clay vessels, small clay pots, in which they stew their cooked dishes. Most of these stews consist of meat, could be lamb, beef, or chicken, and sometimes seafood, stewed in yogurt. So it's an acquired taste, but when you go to a good place, like the one I found in Tirana, Taverna Zoto, it is really, really excellent. They have a crepe pie there, which is vegetarian, by the way, that we couldn't stop eating it. There's also plenty of fresh fruit in Albania at prices that are ridiculously cheap. They practically give watermelons away on the road. And also on every breakfast buffet, you will find what we call spoon fruit in Greece. It's candied fruit and candied fruit peels. And it's best enjoyed with these little fritters, these airy, lightly fried fritters that you dip into and are quite addictive.
You apologize to the kosher listeners for the seafood and possibly for the beef stew in yogurt. Is there anything for a kosher traveler to eat in Albania?
Absolutely. And amazingly, considering the destination, it might be one of the easiest places. There is a Chabad center in Albania, which is not easy to find on the Chabad website, by the way. You can find it through Google Maps better, which even gives the phone number. But it is a subsidiary of the Chabad of Northern Greece, which is headquartered in Thessaloniki. And I spoke with the rabbi who serves both communities, Rabbi Yoel Kaplan, and he has arranged kosher food not only for all of Northern Greece, but Albania and beyond. And if you contact him via WhatsApp, he even has a catalog where you can order. You can order weekday meals. You can even order pre-prepared Shabbat meals. And he will overnight it to you from Thessaloniki to Tirana. You can also organize kosher food through an organization called kosherbalkan.org. And Rabbi Finman will also set you right.
Buzzy, how do our listeners find out more about Albania and more about you?
I was fortunate to find a very professional tour operator based in the United States, by the way, but with offices also in Albania, Adriatic Tours. They were able to take care of all my needs.
What's the buzz on Buzzy? How can we find out more about you for those who are interested?
Yes, I'm quite accessible. I'm on Instagram where you can message me. I'm on Facebook. And my email is very simple, buzzygo, not only the first two letters of my last name, but because I'm always on the go, buzzygo, one word, at gmail.com.
It's time for Buzzy to go.
Sorry to hear that.
Thanks, Buzzy. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Albania Fact File. There are no direct flights from either the US or Israel to Albania. However, there are reasonable connections from Israel via Istanbul, Athens, and Vienna. From the US and Canada, you can connect via several major European hubs, such as London, Zurich, and Vienna. Connecticut-based Adriatic Tours, that's Adriatic with a K, can recommend not only the best route from your point of departure, but also handle all your needs once you arrive, including hotel bookings and guided tours. Alternatively, Albania is easily reached by ferry from Bari, Ancona and Trieste in Italy, as well as Corfu in Greece. There are car rental agencies in Albania, but hiring cars with drivers is a very affordable alternative. There are also organised tours available. Albania has no official hotel rating system, so any property can define itself as 5-star, with nothing to back up its claim. A local favourite in the capital Tirana is the prestigious Zheko Imperial. There are also a few international chains such as Radisson Blu and Hilton Garden Inn. The nearest beach resort to Tirana is Durres, where the Adriatic, again with a K, offers luxurious accommodation. The official currency of Albania is the lek, although the euro is widely accepted. One US dollar will currently buy you €1 or 116 lek. Albania has very diverse climatic regions, ranging from the coastal plain to the mountainous regions of the north and east. The Adriatic coast and the capital enjoy a Mediterranean and continental climate, with four distinct seasons. Summer temperatures in these areas reach into the 30s, that's 85 to 90 degrees Fahrenheit, while winter temperatures drop to around 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Albanian cuisine draws a lot from the sea, while traditional foods feature primarily stews cooked in clay pots. Kosher food can be arranged by Chabad of Albania at 1 Helmut Kohl Street in Tirana. It is best to make plans in advance using the contact page on the website kosherbalkan.org.
Oh, Mark, you said to me as we're crossing Tel Aviv, you said, it's a really hot day. It's either 18 minutes on foot or 19 minutes by public transport. And then you said, you're really too hot to do the walking. And then we walked to the nearest bus stop. And then you said, oh, let's go to the bus stop after that and the bus stop after that. And we finally made it to our final destination, which is the seafront.
August on Tel Aviv Beach. Row after row of sunbed. People going slowly brown, or for us Ashkenazim, slowly red.
Beyond them, of course, are the people doing their things on surfboards and kayaks and heaven knows what else they're in. It really is a beautiful location. There are miles and miles of public beach here, all the way from Jaffa in the south up to, well, I guess up to as far as the
Lebanon. Port.
As far as Lebanon, yeah, but in Tel Aviv, to the port of Tel Aviv at the northern end. It's a great place to come spend a day, or just at the end of the day to unwind, find a bar where you can get something fizzy and strong and tasty.
Certainly a contrast to where we've been today, Philadelphia and Albania.
Absolutely. So we should say thank you to both Michael and Buzzy for entertaining us and hosting us and regaling us with their tales of the places that they love so much. And of course, at this time, it's also the opportunity for us to ask you to do several things.
If you want to find out more about Philadelphia, Albania or Tel Aviv, or anything about our podcast, please go to our social media at MarkDavidPod or email us markdavidpod@gmail.com.
On top of all of that, it would be great if you subscribed, if you told your friends about this podcast, if you shared. And most important for us is if you write a lovely comment on your podcast provider.
And if you enjoyed the podcast, we have another 40 podcasts for you to listen to.
At least
40. We've done 40.
I know.
Hard work.
Absolutely. We need a holiday, as
Definitely.
You said. Yeah. Time for the quiz questions.
Question number one. Which actor and musician sang about being West Philadelphia, born and raised?
Why are you looking at me?
I thought you might know the answer.
Well, I do know that we always know the answers because we've planned the questions
Sometimes
together.
Sometimes you forget.
That's very true.
It is the very talented and slightly angry Will Smith, who was born in Philadelphia.
Make sure you don't say anything else or we could have a lawsuit. And the other question, let's see if I can actually read it in one go this time without messing it up.
I reckon you can't.
Probably not. Question number two was, Albanians refer to themselves as Shikit... No, I can't. As Shqiptare.
Isn't that the airport in Amsterdam?
Shqiptare. What does it mean? And the answer is...
Something more pronounceable, I think.
Hopefully. It's Sons of Eagles. We hope you've enjoyed this pod. And we'll leave you as we toast ourselves on the front, as we say in England, on the front at Tel Aviv.
Last one into the sea is a big blouse.
See you the next time.
Bye-bye.